I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, what SCOTUS's ruling on mail-in voting means for states like Washington. Plus, did a notorious local vice principal finally lose his job, this time over an appearance on a reality TV show? And homeless encampments are hiding hundreds of violent, non-compliant sex offenders. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's Undivided, P-O-D.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I'm sure you've seen the news that Dolly Parton has died, and it's like one of the last truly beloved people on the planet who doesn't have an enemy in the world. We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later on. I do want to start with the SCOTUS ruling on mail-in voting. If you're in Washington state or a mail-in voting state, now 2 months until the general election, obviously you've been watching this very closely. I got a flurry of text messages after this came out yesterday. This from the SCOTUS blog. Supreme Court allows Trump administration to move forward with order imposing restrictions on mail-in voting. So there's a few things, and don't get too overly excited or concerned or whatever it is, because this isn't going to have any immediate impact. Certainly the impacts could be profound for states like Washington, but there's some more legal stuff going on. But first, just a reminder of what President Trump wants to do when it comes to mail-in voting. So, you know, states are responsible for administering their own elections. So there's only so much that the federal government can do. But since so many states rely on the United States Postal Service to get ballots from point A to point B, the United States Postal Service is something that President Donald Trump can control. And so one of the things he wanted to do is basically say, okay, if you're not abiding by these standards, these very set standards that are going to be implemented across the country for how these ballots basically look, how they're tracked, and all of these things, then you can't use USPS to be able to send mail-in voting. So President Trump had signed the executive order at the center of this dispute in March. Again, this is from SCOTUS blog. It says, as it came to the court in late July, the focus of the case was on three different provisions of the order. The first instructs the Department of Homeland Security to create lists of the adult U.S. citizens in each state and to send those lists to states at least 60 days before a federal election. The second provision commands the U.S. Attorney General to prioritize the investigation and, as appropriate, the prosecution of state and local officials who issue federal ballots to individuals who aren't on that list, essentially. And the third provision requires states to give the United States Postal Service a list of voters to whom the states intend to send mail ballots, and it prohibits USPS from mailing ballots to voters who are not on the list. And so that is sort of the workaround that President Donald Trump wants to employ against states that don't require voter ID, like Washington state. We are an attestation state, like Scout's Honor. I'm a U.S. citizen, and you can just check a box, get sent a ballot. There are obviously legal consequences if you lie on that form, if you decide to vote, even though you're not eligible to vote. But how many of them are actually getting caught? What's the process by which they would even get caught? You can get a driver's license in Washington state without a social security number. We give driver's licenses to illegals, and then you can use that driver's license to be able to register to vote and information. You don't even need a driver's license, frankly, to register to vote in Washington state. And so, you know, unless somebody snitches on you, you could get away with voting as an illegal alien pretty easily in Washington state. So this is President Trump's sort of workaround. What does this mean for Washington state and other mail-in voting states? This from The Times. Nothing changes yet with the Supreme Court's order on elections, but it could open door to chaos. And why nothing's changing for now is that this isn't the Supreme Court ruling on the merits of the legal challenges. It was basically just stopping an injunction that prevented the president's steps from being implemented in 23 states, including ours. It says the Supreme Court's decision giving preliminary approval for President Donald Trump's order restricting mail-in voting may not lead to a single election procedure changing for this November midterm, but it has already thrown into uncertainty the method that nearly one-third of the country uses to vote. Rather than saying Trump's order is illegal, the High Court said Monday it was too early for Democratic-run states to challenge it in June when they convinced a federal judge in Boston to freeze the order. So this effectively restarts the legal fight, which will move forward, obviously. And it's kind of cutting it close because, I mean, if you're like overseas or a member of the military, you're going to get sent a ballot pretty dang soon. And then keep in mind, there is a second injunction that bars the USPS from making changes to comply with Trump's directive. That still remains in effect. But the administration late yesterday filed a motion asking for that second injunction to be removed. So if the second injunction is removed, then yeah, we might be in a situation. I have said, as much as I understand some of the issues around mail-in voting, and as much as I understand the problem in states that do not require voter ID, I have some concerns about some sort of upheaval in our election system with 2 months to go until November. I mean, even on a good year where there aren't sort of sudden changes, sometimes the election system, not necessarily in our state, but other states, can be thrown into chaos for a variety of reasons. And so I don't think government's very competent. I don't think our state government is very competent. I don't trust in their ability to be able to very quickly comply with new regulations and make sure that everyone's ballots are counted. So that is sort of freaking me out. Governor Bob Ferguson said in a statement, "While today's decision by the U.S. Supreme Court is terrible, it's only the beginning of the legal challenge. If these rules are allowed to stand, they will disenfranchise Washingtonians and lead to federal interference in our state's elections." To which I would ask, like, let's get rid of the timeline issue, right? The fact that this is very close to an election. How do any of those rules disenfranchise Washingtonians who are legally allowed to vote? They compile a list. Here are all the U.S. citizens legally allowed to vote in a particular state. If you give a ballot to someone who's not on that list, USPS isn't going to handle that ballot. How does that disenfranchise any Washingtonian by just saying only legal citizens who are legally allowed to vote can vote? It doesn't. This is from Attorney General Nick Brown. He says, "A majority of the U.S. Supreme Court does not seem to recognize the grave threat the president's actions pose for our democracy." Again, I would ask how. "There is nothing hypothetical about his intent to illegally suppress legitimate votes." Again, I would ask, how does that illegally suppress legitimate votes? He went on to say, "Fortunately, today's decision does not bless the substance of the president's actions. It simply says states must wait slightly longer to challenge them. We stand ready to take action to protect the integrity of our elections," which, again, I think that's the goal of everyone, "and prevent this clearly unconstitutional overreach from taking effect." He says states control elections, not the president. To that, I agree, but the president does control the United States Postal Service, and that is what he is seeking to control here. And you want to use, and you do utilize to great extent, a federal agency to carry out state elections. So if you want to say states control the elections, okay, well then just cut the USPS out of it. And that would require a lot of investment from the state of Washington, and it would require a system that you can replace to send mail ballots to people and to make sure they get back to elections offices in time. Is that something that you think you could do? If not, then you might be stuck following the rules that the United States Postal Service puts in place, or we could just forget it all and go back to in-person voting. Your choice, but I feel like, you know, this might turn into a chaotic situation. We'll have to wait and see what SCOTUS does on that second injunction, and then we can sort of get into, okay, now what are we going to do before November? All right, we have a ton of very meaty stories on the show today and a lot to get through. Some of it is pretty heavy stuff, so I apologize in advance. I want to start with this story from the Post-Millennial. Our friend Ari Hoffman over there wrote it, and it gets into a larger issue, which is the number of violent sex predators living in homeless encampments in Seattle and across Washington State who are non-compliant. Non-compliant meaning, if you're a homeless sex offender, you still have, and you have more requirements to check in than a regular sex offender who has a permanent fixed address, yet it's not happening. They're not checking in. Of course they're not checking in. And so now they're just littered across cities like Seattle and across the state of Washington, waiting in prey for future victims. So this is the headline: convicted child rapist on the lam for 5 years, arrested, found living at a taxpayer-funded Seattle tiny home village. Great. Not necessarily a shock to me, but let's read some of the finer points. The U.S. Marshals Pacific Northwest Violent Offender Task Force arrested him, 57-year-old Timothy Martin. They found him at a tiny house village run by Lehigh in Seattle's Interbay neighborhood, okay? So the Lehigh thing we'll talk about in a moment. He was wanted by the Department of Corrections for violating the conditions of his lifetime supervision after being convicted of first-degree rape of a child after he sexually assaulted a 10-year-old girl. They obtained an arrest warrant for him in December of 2021. 2021, he failed to register as a sex offender. They've been looking for this guy for 5 years because he was non-compliant. He wasn't doing what he was supposed to do as a sex offender, and especially as a sex offender with a non-fixed address. And it's not as if this guy was living in a tent in the woods. He was living at the Interbay Tiny House Village on property belonging to the Port of Seattle and operated by the Low Income Housing Institute, which gets money from taxpayers. So, not just anything in the woods, hiding from the law, hiding on Seattle property in a tiny house that you helped to pay for 5 years. And as the postmillennial points out, Martin's presence there at the facility raises questions about Lehigh's screening policies. In 2018, when Lehigh opened Lake Union Village, another tiny house facility, they told Fox 13 in an interview that they would conduct background checks on prospective residents. According to the Fox 13 report, Lehigh said the screening would specifically check for sex offender status, active warrants, and other criminal histories. So it's unclear if they just decided not to do that, or if they just decided they'd only do it at certain tiny house villages and not this tiny house village in Interbay. Not clear if they knew that this guy was a sex offender with a 5-year-long active outstanding warrant. So again, they're doing an interview just a couple years ago. Oh yes, Lehigh's so great. Give us your money. They have all these big fundraisers for all the woke businesses to fund Lehigh. And then they get taxpayer funds. And they say, but it's going to be fine. These tiny house villages will be super safe. We're going to screen prospective tenants. We're going to make sure they're not sex offenders. So people can just come here and, you know, have a safe place to be. All right. Well, you had a child rapist who was living in one of your tiny house villages and had a warrant out for his arrest for 5 years. So clearly that's not happening. But it brings up this larger issue. And our friend Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle pointed this out. She says there are nearly 500 non-compliant sex offenders in Seattle right now. Nearly half of them are transient. Seattle has special drop-in hours for homeless sex offenders to self-report to encourage compliance, because what else are you going to do? And sure enough, for sex offender registration, they have a homeless offender weekly check-in availability Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. And they just, what, expect that the homeless sex offender, likely drug addicts, are going to be like, oh, hey, guys, I got to take a break from the fentanyl and head down to do my weekly check-in as a homeless sex offender? And you look at, and it's true, I mean, you want to ruin your day? You just look at the sex offender registry. We talked about this not long ago. You want to ruin your day, plug your address in and look at the sex offender registry. But to Andrea's point, when you look at the sex offender registry in Seattle, it's littered with people who are non-compliant, which could mean a variety of things. You can live in a house and still be non-compliant, failing to meet the conditions of your release. But then you have these individuals who are non-compliant and they're labeled transient sex offenders. So you could be a transient level 3, transient level 2, transient level 1. That's a specific designation that not only obviously corresponds to your likelihood to reoffend, so a level 3 sex offender would be considered the most dangerous type of registered sex offender, but transient is a specific designation that has to do with someone who, you know, serves their sentence, they're going to get out, and they basically don't have a place to go. And I mean, there's no real way around this, right? I mean, what are you going to do if you have a sex offender who gets out of prison? You can't keep them in prison for the rest of their lives. They still have constitutional rights. And short of the government giving them and paying for a place for them to stay so we know where they're at all times, yeah, some of them are going to end up homeless. But actually, according to Washington state law, and I won't get into the dirty details of it, but they have a law in the book that says basically offenders who lack a fixed residence, so they're labeled transient sex offenders, right? They have way more regulations under law than a regular sex offender. A person who lacks a fixed residence must report weekly in person to the sheriff of the county where he or she is registered. But that's one of those things where I look at it and I think, how dumb are we? You really think that they're going to do that? They can't even hold down a job to allow them to rent an apartment. And you think that they're going to report weekly in person to the sheriff of the county where he or she is registered? Of course, they're not going to do that. But I can tell you a pretty good way to deal with this issue is to make sure that police are routinely going into homeless encampments, checking people, running names, seeing if they have warrants, seeing if they're sex offenders, seeing if they're compliant. I mean, it took them 5 years to find this guy at the Lehigh Tiny House Village. And this is also one of these reasons why it bothers me to my core that the legacy media in Seattle will never, like, attach the label homeless to people who are arrested for sex crimes. Because this, a transient population is by nature, I think, presents a greater risk to the public, whether they're doing drugs, whether they're out there stealing things to fund a drug habit, or whether they're one of these hundreds and hundreds of sex offenders who are non-compliant, just living in homeless encampments around the city. It's just there's nobody's tracking them, nobody's monitoring, nobody's watching them. And one of these examples was this guy. Remember this story? Gosh, this was, I think it was this year, but it was several months ago, right? The homeless guy who at one point had been living in a low-income kind of housing unit. But he's the guy who pulled, allegedly, the teenage girl from the bus stop into the woods and sexually assaulted her. And then at the time when this happened, and it was a huge story, right? The Seattle Times wouldn't call him homeless. They called him a stranger. Oh, man jailed in luring, sexual assault of teen near bus stop. Nowhere in the story did they ever mention he was homeless. Because I don't know, they just don't want to associate homelessness with criminality. Which, who does any of this help? Who does any of it help? And that's what I don't get with the Seattle Times and, like, Lehigh. You're saying that you're this wonderful institution that should get all of this funding, and we're going to get these people out of these dirty, disgusting encampments and into a tiny house so they can rebuild their lives. Meanwhile, you're putting people in tiny houses next to some guy who raped a 10-year-old girl who's been wanted for 5 years because you don't bother checking their criminal history? How is that going to help the rest of the people who are living there get back on the right track? Surrounded by, how does that improve the safety and quality of their living situation? Take them out of a homeless encampment and then plop them right next to a violent child sex predator who's been on the run for 5 years. And then the media, oh, they'll cover the story, but they will not say that they're homeless because they just have to gaslight the public into believing that everyone who's living out on the streets is just down on their luck and they probably lost a job because some evil big business laid them off and now they're just homeless and it's just an unfortunate situation all around. All right, if that story is disturbing, our next one is really a doozy. First, there's been a rash of fake contractor reports that the Department of Homeland Security is investigating in Washington State and five other states. And it basically involves some dude, he apparently has an Irish accent, knocks on your door, offers to, like, fix your roof for $1,000 or something, tears it apart, and then says, oh, I need more money. Don't fall for that. I don't think you would. Maybe warn an elderly loved one about it, but I know that you guys would never fall for it because if you need your roof repaired or a new roof, you're going to call our friends at Valentine Roofing. 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing, one of our wonderful advertisers. They've helped thousands of Western Washington homeowners since 2008 with their roofing needs. They also do gutter cleaning, exterior cleaning, etc. And if you're thinking your roof is probably on its last legs, right now they're offering priority scheduling before things get busy as the weather moves in and fall turns to winter. So priority scheduling means if you get in touch with them now, they can get your job started, get you scheduled within 3 weeks of signing an agreement, and they make the process really simple. You can expect an estimate with transparent pricing, options that fit your needs, and they have really flexible financing options, which if you do need to replace your roof, you know, obviously all homeowners know that can be a larger expense. And so having flexible financing options is always a great thing. Call 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing to schedule your free estimate today. Disturbing story from our friends at Redux. So there was a lawsuit filed in 2025 the details of it weren't known at the time, and it just got refiled because apparently there were some issues with how it was filed initially. And so it just got refiled, and Redux has got its hands on it. Here is their headline. Why, Nicole? Why do I have to read these things?
Sorry about that.
Yeah, exclusive. Child rapist, baby murderer, and dog rapist team up to sue the state of Washington over gender-affirming care in prison. Yes, so these three men who have committed some of the most heinous crimes that you can commit on this planet are suing the state of Washington because they're arguing that they're not getting enough access to gender-affirming care, which is fascinating considering in Washington state they hire specialized doctors in the Department of Corrections specifically to provide prison inmates with gender-affirming care, and they allow men to identify as women and go and serve their time in the women's prison and cater to them with things like laser hair removal and boob jobs. So I'm not exactly sure in a state that definitely values providing gender-affirming care to prison inmates with your money what kind of case they think they have. But let's read on, shall we? And again, some of the details are very disturbing, but I think it's important to understand the type of people our state is catering to. Three depraved criminals housed in a Washington state prison are suing the Department of Corrections for human rights violations. Interesting. Child rapist, baby murderer, dog rapist want to sue the state for human rights violations because they really value other people's human rights. After they say they were deprived of adequate gender-affirming care and treatment. Redux can name the inmates involved in the suit as Michael Caldwell, who raped two children, Hunter Christian, who raped multiple dogs, and Andrew Kennedy, who murdered an infant. So let's get into the real sick, depraved, twisted minds of these men who suddenly think that they're women, okay? Let's start with Michael Caldwell. Again, raped two girls, then blamed the girls for seducing him. Michael is now going by a new name, Skeggy Hildolf Katrin Sonor, or Hildy for short. In his list of complaints, Caldwell reveals that his facility has a personal laser hair removal device for transgender inmates to use, and that the inmates were allowed to use the device in a private room within the medical clinic once or twice per week. But in 2024, the clinic discontinued access to the private room and told transgender inmates they would have to use the device in their own cell. Oh, the horror. The horror. You can't use your portable laser hair removal in a private room anymore. You've got to do it in your cell. Caldwell deems that unacceptable, writing, "My cell door has a 34 by 34 inch window where any male inmate or officer can see inside my cell and watch me use the device on my maturing female body." In another complaint, Caldwell states that he was hired at the correctional textile shop where inmates are expected to wear a specific uniform and that not being provided a separate changing room from the other male inmates represented a breach of his constitutional rights. Again, he raped two girls. He's in prison for raping two girls. He's worried about breaches of his constitutional rights because he doesn't get, as a maturing female, he doesn't get a private safe space away from other male inmates. Guy who raped two girls wants a private safe space away from men. Again, that was Michael Caldwell, a.k.a. Skeggy Hildolf Katrin Sonor. Mental illness. All right, the second guy, Hunter Christian, new name, Sizeth Aslan Magnus, raped at least three dogs, including a Rottweiler, an older Chihuahua, and a black lab. Filmed the bestiality, was found in possession of the videos along with child sex abuse material. Jesus. The complaint continues with the declaration of Hunter Christian, who changed his name to Sizeth Aslan Magnus. Christian identifies as non-binary and intersex and declares he, him, and they, them pronouns in the document. In his grievances, Christian claims that he was denied access to minoxidil treatments for head hair growth because he had no diagnosis for gender dysphoria and no desire to start feminizing hormone therapy. Christian also claims he was denied access to low-dose testosterone, which he wanted to begin to address his shrinking testicle size. Like with Caldwell, Christian also notes he was eventually given access to a personal laser hair removal device for his body, but he refused to use it due to lack of privacy in his cell. So he admits he has no interest in starting feminizing hormone therapy, has no diagnosis for gender dysphoria, wanted head hair growth treatment, probably because he's going bald and thought, why not get free head hair growth treatment while I'm incarcerated? And then he also wanted low-dose testosterone to address his shrinking testicle size. None of that screams like non-binary, want to present as a woman, need gender-affirming care. It's just a balding pervert who wants to leave prison with bigger testicles and a full head of hair. But he doesn't want hair elsewhere because he's using the personal hair removal device. So again, this is one of the individuals, Rape Three Dogs, now suing the state of Washington for human rights violations. I got to do another one. Andrew Stephen Kennedy. I don't know if he's changed his name. I think he's still going by Andrew Stephen Kennedy. Beat an 11-month-old family member to death. Got an extraordinary sentence due to the brutality of the crime. He claims to have been repeatedly misgendered by a medical specialist at his facility, with the doctor treating him as a cisgender man. He says he identifies as non-binary and two-spirit. Two-spirit is an identity associated with indigenous people. There's no evidence he himself is indigenous. He also identifies as intersex. In his grievances, Christian claims he was denied access to, again, the same head hair growth treatment. He had no diagnosis for gender dysphoria. Also didn't want to start that. He said, I see my curves and hips as a gift from the goddesses and my masculine traits as a gift from the gods. I was from birth granted the boon of seeing feminine and masculine within myself, yet too blind and misled to truly see them, he wrote. Great. So these three men now suing the state of Washington, saying that their human rights have been violated, that they are entitled to be able to use the portable hair removal device in a private space, that they are being misgendered, that they aren't being given separate changing spaces. And we're talking about a murderer, a child rapist, and a dog rapist. This is the state of Washington, the most ridiculous place on earth. All right, I want to do a follow-up to a story that I first talked about on the show, gosh, probably a year ago. It's been quite a while. It has to do with the Initiative to Protect Girls Sports and the Initiative to Restore Parental Rights. So this was an article published by Publicola. Interim Police Chief Andre Sales filed complaint against hate crimes detective for speaking at pro-LGBTQ rally. Now, this story involves me quite a bit because you'll recall that I went off on a Seattle police detective because she had decided to speak at one of these like no hate type. And I don't think at the time they were calling themselves No Hate in Washington State. They were referring to themselves as something else. But speaking at an event against the initiatives and identified herself as a police detective.
My name is Elizabeth Waring, and I'm coming to you as a police detective with nearly 30 years of experience. I am deeply concerned about the effects of proposed initiatives 26001 and 26638. I worked 9 years investigating hate crime and bias incidents, and many other years investigating crimes against children, sexual assault, and domestic violence.
So didn't identify herself as a Seattle police detective, but said, I'm a detective. My name's Elizabeth Waring. And if you plug that into the old Google machine, you would have very easily found out, as we did at the time, that she was a Seattle police detective. So she identifies herself as a detective who specializes in, you know, like child abuse cases and things like that, bias crimes, hate crimes. And she uses and abuses that position to go on at that press conference and tell lies about what the initiatives actually do.
Proposed Initiative 638 would force girls to prove their sex before participating in sports, including being compelled to expose their genitals to an adult if they don't have other documentation.
Which obviously is, was, and is a lie. And I lost my mind on this detective on the show. For again, standing up there as a police detective and using that, you know, the trust of that position to spread the debunked lie that protecting girls' sports means the girls are just going to have to drop their pants and expose their genitals to an adult. And then she went on to essentially use the potential of something as serious as child sex abuse to push a political agenda.
In addition to violating a child's dignity, I believe there is a high potential for sexual abuse under circumstances such as these.
I mean, that's insane. As a detective, you're saying, oh, if we pass this initiative, which I disagree with politically, children will be abused sexually. Where is the evidence of that? Where is the data and statistics? And who are you saying is going to abuse them? Well, first of all, you know, they're not just going to force girls to expose their genitals. This is part of a routine physical examination that kids already have to do for sports. We've already debunked that. Como News debunked it. Apparently, no other news outlets sees fit to debunk it. But they already require routine physical exams. Your doctor already knows if your child is a male or a female. And so she's just throwing it out there as a detective, just suggesting that if we do this, kids are going to be molested and raped. I mean, how disgusting is that? And she continued.
I believe this initiative would increase the risk of sexual abuse for girls participating in sports.
Disgusting.
Sexual predators often set themselves up as authority figures to give themselves more power and access to their victims.
Yeah, and again, who are you accusing? Like, you were saying coaches are now going to sexually abuse these girls? Like, what is the... I mean, it's... A lot of people have told this lie from No Hate in Washington State and from the left about, you know, the invasive genital exams. And I've been mad about all those instances, but when it came out of the mouth of a police detective who styled herself as an expert in the arena of child sex abuse, to use that position of trust and authority to spew a lie and scare the parents of young girls into thinking that if this political initiative passes, that there's a high likelihood that their daughters will be sexually abused is one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen or heard out of a law enforcement official in my life. So that happened, you know, many months ago. And I expressed on my show that I was like, she should be fired over this. Why would they ever have allowed her to speak at this? So it turns out that behind the scenes, then assistant, or I guess deputy police chief at the time, Andre Sales, saw my segment and decided that he was going to file a complaint with OPA, the Office of Professional Police Accountability. And I didn't ask him to do that. I've met now interim police chief Sales one time. We didn't speak about this issue at all, but he clearly had seen my segment and decided that he was bothered by what he saw. So Publicola reports, Seattle interim police chief Andre Sales filed a complaint with the Office of Police Accountability against a veteran detective and one-time leader of SPD's hate crimes unit over a three-minute speech she gave at a No Hate in Washington State rally last November when Sales was deputy chief. Sales accused Detective Beth Waring of failing to follow a lawful order and dishonesty, fireable offenses that could have cost the 29-year-old police veteran her job, her law enforcement certification, and her ability to testify in court as a police officer. In the complaint, Sales wrote, in her speech, Detective Waring made several comments that lacked credible facts related to the potential exposure to sexual assault by adults on youth, especially females and persons who identify as LGBTQ, which she did. That's not even in dispute. She just like made up stuff about this will lead to more sexual assaults of girls. What a disgusting thing to like fearmonger parents over a personal political agenda. And so that's what then Deputy Chief Sales wrote to the Office of Professional Accountability. The links Sales provided included two videos by right-wing commentator Brandi Cruz, who attacked Waring at length on her show on December 11th and December 15th, calling her comments genuinely disgusting. Yeah, I did. On her December 11th segment, Cruz said she had contacted SPD about Waring's comments and prayed to God they would take action against her. I did say all of that. I didn't contact, you know, the deputy police chief Andre Sales, though. I mean, we certainly reached out to SPD for comment. That is my job. Addressing Waring, Cruz said, do you really think there is going to be no ramifications for just lying through your teeth as a Seattle police officer? So that happened in a memo proposing a dismissal. Well, before I get to the dismissal aspect of it. So I had ranted about it just so if we're following the sort of series of events. I ranted about it on my show. Deputy Chief Andre Sales saw the segments, sent the information to the Office of Police Accountability, and basically said, you know, she disobeyed a lawful order And so like in subordination, and she lied. This Publicola article also talks about the fact that Andre Sales had apparently given Detective Waring permission to speak at that very event. So she had asked permission from the police department to speak, but he didn't give her permission to lie. And from my understanding of the complaint, he hadn't given her permission to identify herself as like a police detective. She was able to do it in her personal capacity. But it seems like he thought she crossed a line by saying, I'm a detective, Elizabeth Waring, which very easily you could tie to SPD. She's doing it at a political event. And dishonesty is one of the worst things you can do as a cop. Cops get fired for dishonesty all the time. That's like an immediate fireable offense because it puts you on a Brady list for Brady violations where you can't testify in court because you've been deemed as dishonest. So this Publicola article paints now interim chief Andre Sales as a horrible guy. You gave her permission to speak at this event, and then you used clips from right-wing podcaster Brandi Cruz to file an OPA complaint that could have been career-ending for her. Isn't that what left-wing outlets like this always demand? Accountability? Proper investigations? He referred it, based on his concerns, to the proper investigative authority, which independently decided it was going to dismiss it. And that's the OPA's job. It says, in a memo proposing the dismissal language, OPA noted pointedly that political statements are protected free speech and political activity under state law. It said, and SPD's own policy manual, Waring, the dismissal continued, was also not insubordinate, as she did, in fact, follow the guidance she was given when she sought and received explicit permission from Sales to speak at the rally. Now, I agree with like sort of First Amendment issues. How many times have SPD officers been in the news and in trouble for saying something unhinged, whether on duty or off duty? Entities like Publicola rail against that stuff all the time. But apparently, the left-wing bloggers that hate cops are just fine with dishonesty, as long as it's dishonesty aimed at a political initiative that they don't like. It's just this fascinating article, because again, this author hates cops. And if it was a cop, if it was like roles reversed and a detective telling a lie in favor of an initiative, you don't think that they'd be like, oh, they need to go straight to OPA and be fired. Is lying not lying? And I'm pretty sure I don't know exactly what kind of permissions he gave Detective Waring to speak at this event in her own personal capacity, but I'm pretty confident lying about the potential or making up a potential of child sex abuse is not what he gave her permission to do, and does reputational damage to the police department and to detectives who do really hard work in the arena of child sex abuse. And apparently his complaint was not the only one. People probably watched my show and filed their own complaints against Detective Waring, all of which were closed very quickly. It was June 3rd, 2026. These complaints were closed by Seattle's Office of Police Accountability, basically chalking it up to, oh, First Amendment rights. So, and I love the First Amendment. By all means, if Elizabeth Waring had gotten up at this event, never identified herself as a police detective, and had just said, hey, you know, I think this is a bad initiative or whatever it is, it wouldn't have been on our show. It wouldn't have even been on our radar. But the fact that she used her badge and her expertise to try to scare parents into thinking that keeping boys out of girls' sports will lead to more child sex abuse, which she just pulled out of her ass, I mean, that's just a totally made up thing, is outrageous. It's conduct unbecoming. It's dishonest. So as a result of all of this, she says, and she whined to Publicola, oh, Brandi was mean to me and they were mean to me. She says she decided to retire. She had been on a sabbatical anyway at the time, pursuing a PhD when she spoke at the rally. She says the complaint was a shocking attempt to curtail her free speech and smear her after a long career as a hostage negotiator, bias crimes expert, and clinical counselor. As the direct result of the complaint, she said she decided to retire from SPD and pursue a different career. Something tells me she was already planning to do that. She was on a sabbatical to pursue a PhD and just was so perturbed by an OPA complaint that they dismissed anyway that she decided to retire. No, what she's doing, mark my words, what she's doing is she crawled to a far left outlet that would give her sympathy on this because the outlet doesn't like me, hates conservatives, all these things. And she's setting this up as an unfair attack on her First Amendment rights, and she's going to try to sue. Because the city just pays out like this. City just pays out like this. Unless it's my lawsuit, which they've been dragging on for 3.5 years, but I digress. So she's probably going to try to sue the city of Seattle for, oh, attacking her First Amendment rights and ruining her reputation and her storied career. You should have thought about that when you got in front of a microphone and lied and made up stuff about something as horrible as child sex abuse. And then, you know, interim chief Sales, who's been the interim chief for what, like 3 weeks? If he had not reported, think about this in the flip side. If he had not reported allegations, even if it's allegations on a news channel or a podcast, that a detective lied about anything and a left-wing outlet found out about it, they'd be like, interim chief Sales failed to report credible information that a detective had lied. So it's like, he's never going to win. You can't win with the crazy people. Damned if he reports it, damned if he doesn't report it. But again, she did lie. Repeatedly, fear-mongered parents, all in the pursuit of a personal political agenda, and hid behind her badge to do it. Disgusting. And I, for one, am very grateful that she's no longer a member of the Seattle Police Department. All right, the craziest story I've saved. It does get wilder, you guys. I told you we have the media show today. I was almost like not quite ready to pull the trigger on this story today, and Nicole's looking at me like, no, we got to. And then I watched the video she pulled, and I'm like, oh, we do have to. Well, that's all I'll tell you. First, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. He's just the guy you want to use if you're thinking about selling your home. And yeah, there's a lot of people who have been picking up and moving out of state. And he says, you know, his clients he's working with aren't necessarily subject to the latest like income tax on millionaires, but they see what's coming and they see that it's not going to be an income tax on millionaires for long. And they're looking to get out of here.
Many people believe, as you do, as do I, that it is going to be an income tax for everyone. And believe it or not, the vast majority of the people that I work with, they're actually not going to be impacted by the millionaire's tax. But what they are impacted in is just the cost of living that we are in. And they could be people who are my generation with families. They could be people who are getting ready to retire. And they just see the writing on the wall that it is very, very expensive to live here. They see where the future is headed and they are making the decision to eject now because this is not going to be the place for them to raise their family or the place for them to retire affordably.
Yeah, I hear that all the time. I have friends that just ejected. I like that. Eject. Ejected to Arizona. So Wes is working with a lot of people like that. If you're just at the beginning stages about thinking about ejecting from Washington State, reach out to Wes. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. You got to get an early start because there's so many listings on the market right now. And you might need just to put a little more effort in on the front end, cosmetic upgrades, things like that, to make sure that your home stands out. Wes can help you with all of that. He's an awesome guy. Sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to our segment. Truly unbelievable. All right, there is a notorious school official in Washington State named Logic Amen. That is his name, Logic Amen. We've talked about him quite a bit on the show. He is an assistant principal in the Tacoma School District, and he's been in the news a lot for things like a 2018 rap song he put out.
Yep. Give me a reason just to load up a rifle. Put the fire alarm in the lobby of a high school. Yep. Leave the halls bloody like a high noon typhoon. I'm about to cancel Christmas. Yep. I won't leave a freaking witness. Nah, I'm putting Santa on my hit list.
So at the time he released that rap song, again, an assistant principal in the Tacoma School District put out a song, rap, that said, give me a reason just to load up a rifle, pull the fire alarm in the lobby of my high school, leave the halls bloody like a high noon tycoon. I'm about to cancel Christmas. I won't leave a freaking witness. Nah, I put Santa on my hit list. Okay. Obviously very concerning and problematic, but because he's black, the media didn't care about it. And anybody who did care about it was smeared in the media as attacking basically a black educator. And so he just decided that he could basically say and post whatever he wanted, because as a black educator, nothing was ever going to happen to him. So in October of last year, after Charlie Kirk was assassinated, he posted this on Facebook: America has a white male problem. The irony of both Charlie Kirk and George Floyd being killed by white men. White women either don't have the power and or interest to change the problem they're birthing. So we'd done another story about him at the time saying, hey, remember that guy who rapped about shooting up a high school when he's an assistant principal of a high school and not leaving any witnesses? Yeah, well, here he's at it again saying, after a white man is assassinated for his political beliefs, making it about America having a white male problem, when again, he's an assistant principal in a school with a lot of white males. You can imagine how unsafe that made some parents feel at the time. But still, nothing was happening to him. Nothing was happening to him, up through June at least. Logic A. Mann was listed still as an assistant principal for Lincoln High School, assistant principal for grades 11 and 12. Until now. Oddly, he is no longer listed as an assistant principal on their website. He's missing, okay? We got an email tip. This gets just bizarre. We got an email tip from an employee with the school district saying, hey, did you know that Logic A. Mann was essentially forced out? Now, we are trying to confirm the exact details with the school district. Is he truly gone? Did he quit? Was he fired? But we were told by this source that the reason why he's no longer with the school district, according to them, is that he made an appearance on a little-known show you might have heard of called Married at First Sight. So if you're not familiar with the show, Married at First Sight is just that. Like, you have these matchmakers, and they choose two people, and they walk, you know, the day of their wedding is the first time that they ever meet. Now, he wasn't one of the men that was coupled up for the show, but as part of season 20 of Married at First Sight, his son, Mecca A. Mann, was one of the people coupled up who got married at first sight, okay? So this was taped probably, you know, months and months before it actually aired, but it aired fairly recently. And the fact that it's about a wedding, you know, both the couples, their families all attend, so Logic A. Mann was part of Married at First Sight as a guest at his son's wedding, okay? So according to our source, there was rumors flying around that, you know, Logic A. Mann, when he was featured on Married at First Sight, had said some pretty disturbing things that led to the school sort of forcing him out. And again, we're still getting confirmation from the school, but I do know that after we reviewed the episode he appeared in, he did, in fact, say some very disturbing things as an assistant principal of a high school to his son after the wedding.
You might have to hold on to her, man. I'm getting vibes, man. You guys are already up to it, man. You're going to try to clap the cheeks already.
Yeah, you've seen how it went after we said I do.
She looked a little flustered when she came up there. You clearly had an erection up there, man.
No, I did not. You are lying! You're a falsifier of information!
Poke coming through.
I can't with you.
Oh my gosh. Says to his son, who just married this very young woman, again, he's an assistant principal for grades 11 and 12, says to his son, oh, you're gonna clap them cheeks. Clap them to, you know what that means. And then tells his son, I saw you had an erection poking through. Play that one again, just so you can understand. This is an assistant principal, and this is how he's chosen to carry himself on national TV.
You might have to hold on to her, man. I'm getting vibes, man. You guys are already up to it, man. You're going to try to clap the cheeks already.
Yeah, you've seen how it went after we said I do.
She looked a little flustered when she came up there. You clearly had an erection up there.
Oh?
No, I did not.
My?
You are lying! No, you're a falsifier of information!
Little poke coming through.
I can't with you.
I'm. What father says that to his son on his wedding day? Granted, reality TV show, just meeting the bride. What father says to his son in front of cameras, you're going to clap them cheeks? Maybe the kind of father who writes rap songs about shooting up schools. Maybe the kind of father who gets on social media and says, America has a white male problem, when he's responsible for being an assistant principal in a school with a lot of white males. Maybe a father who has gotten away with a lot of things because of the pigmentation of his skin, the media lets him off the hook, so thought, I can go on this reality show and I can say whatever I want and I can tell my son he should clap them cheeks of his brand new bride who happens to be a very young woman. A very young, very elegant looking, proper young woman. And he's over there telling his son, you better clap them cheeks, you had an erection. Now, is that what has allegedly cost him his job, according to our source, which we're still trying to confirm with the Tacoma School District? I would like to say yes, but I actually think, if I know how these people work, that it's this next clip that if indeed his appearance on this show cost him his job, I think it's probably because of this clip.
Now I'd like to invite the father of the groom to share a few words.
Thank you. So, son, you wanted to be a track star, cross-country star. Then he wanted to be a basketball player.
Oh.
Then you wanted to be an FBI agent. And then you found out they get 1,000 resumes a month. So he went back to basketball when he went to college. And he tried out for the boys' basketball team.
Oh, no, you're not.
And he did not make the boys' basketball team.
I know you're not.
But he did become a D1 practice player for the girls' basketball team.
Oh, my God.
You never told me this.
I couldn't make this up, but I'm not.
He just told you.
I didn't care if you were a cross-country runner, a boxer, a WNBA player.
Oh, he is unhinged.
You were almost there.
I guarantee if it's true that he lost his job over this reality show, it wasn't for saying, you should clap those cheeks of his young bride. It wasn't because he wrote a rap about threatening to shoot up a school. It's probably because he made fun of transgender people. At the end of the day, it was probably woke caught right up to him. Absolutely outrageous. Not a surprise, though. So we're looking for official confirmation from the Tacoma School District. He's no longer listed on the website. We have a source saying he's gone, and the rumors are it's because of his appearance on this show. And look, the appearance isn't surprising. Look at everything else that he's done. This is someone who we've known was not fit to be working in a public school, in any school, around kids. And that appearance on Married at First Sight just underscores that for me. Although the WNBA joke was funny logic, amen. I find that quite funny, actually. All right, and we haven't heard back, right, from the Tacoma School District yet? We're waiting for confirmation. So,
yeah, I do think he wanted to be the star there. It was pretty, oh, yeah. I watched a lot of it, and yeah. He was very much trying to take the
doesn't
attention away from his son.
Yeah, wow. Doesn't surprise me at all. No. Doesn't surprise me at all. Reminds me of another dad I know. In our segment, national news coming up next. First, are you confident about your retirement portfolio and the trajectory that it's on? If you're not absolutely confident, get a second opinion with our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every single day from Zach on his Know Your Risk podcast, YouTube channel, and on all social media platforms, and on Swamp Watch. We have a new episode coming out tonight. So if you're concerned about, AI, tech, what's happening in energy in the Middle East, just get in touch with Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital. Ask for a Know Your Risk portfolio review. It's free. They'll talk about how they're always focused on risk management, looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. It doesn't cost a thing. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. All right, a couple quick national stories. Let's start with the Dolly thing. Is that okay? Man, Nicole, we're sitting here doing show prep, and I hate when people do this, by the way.
I really try not to.
And I'm like, what? What? I hate when people do that. And she's like, Dolly Parton died. Here's her nephew posted on her official page, I think, about her passing.
Hey, everyone.
My name is Brian Seaver, son of Cassie Parton, and I am representing the Parton and Owens family today, announcing the passing of my Aunt Dolly, Rebecca Parton Dean, sister, sis, Aunt Granny to one generation and Gigi to the next. Dolly was a farmer, just like her daddy. He farmed the soil, she farmed songs and happiness. Dolly called me and said she wants to rest in a beautiful bed of plush cotton because after a life wearing heavy rhinestones, she finally deserves to be comfortable and have some rest. Rest in peace, Aunt Dolly, Aunt Granny, Gigi. May God bless Dolly Parton, and may God bless you all. She will always love you.
Yeah, very sad. Dolly Parton passed away. I think one of the few American icons just universally beloved by so many people and just very unapologetic about being herself. And you could say, right. Well, she didn't want to be herself. She put on these, you know, costumes, the big hair and the big, it's like, but that was who she loved being, and she never apologized for it. And I think that was just something very uniquely Dolly Parton, and she was very authentic and people loved it.
Very much. And just wanted everyone to feel the love. I think she didn't ever take a big political stance. You might kind of know where she tilted, but she wanted to appeal to everyone. So,
yeah. And she would even say that, like, I'm not gonna, you know, alienate people or whatever it is. So
it's crazy. I actually used my Dolly Parton mug this morning, not even knowing that was or had probably already happened. Yeah. But I went to her concert, and she was just like such an amazing performer. But she also mentioned at one of them, and I think she's mentioned this a couple places, that she actually recorded an album to be released when she died. So we can look forward to now a new album from Dolly, or at least a couple tracks, I think.
Yeah.
That she's going to release after.
Yeah. And it was one of those things where it's like everybody kind of, you know, it was coming. Like you're just having
she was she kept canceling things, but the rumors are now that she had cancer and knew it, but.
Yeah.
So sad.
Very sad. So I look forward to reading some of your comments on that coming up momentarily. But a couple national stories I want to get to. So President Trump was with Education Secretary Linda McMahon in the Rose Garden yesterday. This very much resonated with me because we've had all these stories of, you know, kids basically being transed by school districts and being told like, oh, you know, you can change who you are. And if you're a boy, you can be a girl and we'll help you do that. And I mean, you know, in Washington state, the state will hide your child if your child wants to be trans and they don't think that you'll agree with it. So President Trump outside the White House called that what it is, child abuse.
Every public school in America is now on notice that if they tell a child that they're trapped in the wrong body, they are committing child abuse. And as we remove the far left extremism from the classroom, we're taking historic action to ensure that every child in America has access to a first class education.
Yeah, it is child abuse, and it should be treated like child abuse, especially when you're, and I saw people on the internet, this isn't happening, this is made up, just like they say the boys and girls sports thing isn't happening, and then you'll give them a bunch of examples. Oh, okay, a couple examples, and it's like, okay, so is it a problem or is it not a problem? Because if it's a problem, then it happening even once is a problem. And in Washington state, we've done, you know, many stories on the transing of children, keeping parents in the dark. So it is child abuse, and we should start calling it child abuse. All right, I just saw this story. And I had to talk about it. Not that I care a lot about the NFL, but when you're worth $500 million, why are you hiring hookers by a trailer park? This is from OutKick. More details about Jed York's arrest and a prostitution sting come to light and begs the question about the 49ers. So the majority owner of the San Francisco 49ers, Jed York, who again is worth $500 million, and his family trust is worth, like, I think I read $9 billion. So he's just got crazy money. So he was arrested in his native Ohio on Sunday on one charge of engaging in prostitution and another charge of possessing criminal tools, whatever that means. And while the more salacious charge was downgraded to disorderly conduct in a plea with prosecutors, it's the initial charge on which York was arrested and arraigned that stinks in the mind of media fans and everybody else. It's an embarrassing charge that raises eyebrows because York is reportedly worth $500 million. He has a family fortune. Yet he tried to enlist the services of a prostitute for $140. He tried to meet that prostitute near the Wheat Hill Mobile Home Community, a trailer park in East Palestine, Ohio. In fact, he had fallen for a police sting by the Mahone Valley Human Trafficking Task Force, and he was intercepted by officers. Like, And he's not a bad looking guy. And he gets a hell of a lot better looking when you find out how much money he's worth for some women. I don't chase those sorts of things. But you know what I mean?
What in the world?
You could, first of all, if you're going to do it, hire an escort from a reputable escort service to come to you. Don't hire a hooker online for $140 and go out and try to meet her outside a mobile home park. It makes no sense.
No. I don't understand it at all. I told you this before the show, but I just found out last weekend that a classmate of mine, I'm not going to obviously give too many details, but I found out he passed away, and apparently it was by the hands of a hooker who drugged him and then was going to rob him and gave him, I guess, a little too much. But then they found out that this was her thing. She had drugged and robbed many men. It was just that he was the one that unfortunately passed away. But this was her deal, and none of them reported it because, of course, no one wanted to report that they got robbed by a hooker.
Right.
And this was her jam. I'm like, what a terrible way to go.
Right. And I mean, obviously he's not dead, but now highly embarrassed. If you're worth, and I hate to say it, but this is the society we're living in with the sugar babies and the OnlyFans. If you're worth $500 million, you can buy sex in a way that's not going to get you caught in a police sting. But also go out. There are so many young women who, because of who you are and the amount of money you have, you can get sex for free. Okay, I'm promising you. Well, free on the front end, you might have to help their lifestyle, right? Not that I'm supporting any of this, I'm just saying, how stupid can you be?
It must be a need for the danger part of it or something. Because it can't be just the sex, like you said, you can get that other places, so it has to be a need for the
danger. Who was a celebrity that got caught shoplifting? And they're like, she's rich. Why is she shoplifting?
Shoplifting.
Yes, it was years ago.
Okay.
It was years ago. When somebody says the name, somebody will say it in the chat.
Yeah, they will.
That got caught shoplifting. And it was like, why are you doing that? No, Tim.
Sorry, Tim.
The chair. Anyway, sorry about the no subscriber poll today. We were dealing with Dolly Parton news and, just happened really fast. All right, let's get to some comments, shall we? Mm-hmm. On the Supreme Court lifting the pause on the USPS ballot rules, Hugh Henriksen says the Postal Service is not supposed to deliver ballots to people who aren't on the list. Next, a Democrat president refuses to deliver mail to recipients they deem hate speech groups. Yeah, I mean, that is a good point about how could a president you don't like manipulate the USPS. Like, you can't get mail from this organization because we've deemed it a hate group or whatever it is. So we always have to be careful about celebrating government interventions of that kind.
Of course.
So I understand that.
But this seems pretty harmless to just say, here's legal voters. Just make sure they're on the list.
It was Winona Ryder.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
From Papa Woody, Bob's talking about the illegal dead and ghost voters.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Homeless camps hiding sex predators. Matthew Cook says, when Lehigh says they vet people living in their shack villages, just know they are full of it. This is who Seattle attracts with their welcoming policies for the homeless. Right. Because if you're a sex offender, and you're dealing with all these sort of restrictions, and you're, let's say you're in Florida, you know that if you don't check in Florida, they're going to come find you.
Right.
And you're going to go to a state like Seattle where it's like, not only do I not have to check in, it might take 5 years for them to find me because they're so understaffed with policing, but I can get this taxpayer-funded tiny house and just live here and nobody's going to even ask if I'm a sex offender.
Well, because, of course, if you ask for ID, then you're racist or...
Right.
You know, I mean, they're not going to ask for ID to actually do a legitimate background check. You can give them any name. They'll check it.
Right.
Done.
Yeah. All right. On the three inmates suing the state for lack of trans care.
Yeah. Joe Dirt says we need to bring back executions, but only for sex predators.
I feel more and more strongly about that as the days go by. Right Meow says, aren't they supposed to lose rights when they commit a crime? No, silly. No, they get special treatment. I want one of those portable laser hair removal things.
Oh,
I might get one because it's $300. And it's but
I'm a big fan of laser hair removal.
I feel like that will take a while. So I don't know.
Well, especially just at home.
Yeah.
They probably have the industrial ones. They probably have a legitimate hair removal system.
Can you imagine being a guard who's doing his rounds, right?
Oh.
And They have to use the hair removal thing in their cell. So the guard's peeking through and he just sees like one leg up and just... Yeah. All right.
And none of these guys want to have the surgery, by the way. I read that somewhere. None of them are actually committed to this transformation.
It's a very small, nationally, there was data on it. It's usually like they get a boob job or laser hair removal or something like that.
Right.
Y says the entitlement of inmates are through the roof and our state is more concerned about catering to them than keeping the rest of us law-abiding citizens safe. Makes total sense.
Would you not be surprised? I don't think I would be surprised if they were up to this to prove something about the system, but their prison lengths are a little too long to be, you know, making a political statement.
Yep. On the SPD detective who lied about the initiatives.
Baron of Gray Matter says police are paramilitary. Speaking out in capacity of your office is not allowed. Just like a military member isn't allowed to do it either. They are arrested, or they just arrested a military officer for the similar issue.
Yeah. So, and I understand that because, like, if you're a member of the military and you go and speak against the president of the United States, right, that's your commander in chief. So I do wonder where the line is. Like, there's freedom of speech, but also rules for having a job, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you had a detective who went out and said something like horribly racist, you don't think that Public Cola would be like, they need to be fired, right, and they would fire this person? So that's what the free speech thing doesn't make a lot of sense in this context. Mm-hmm. On the logic amen, potentially losing his job, Avgeek Joe says he should be saying things like, she looks so beautiful, you are a lucky man, I'm proud of you. Yeah, not go slap them cheeks or crack, whatever it is, crack them cheeks. I don't remember which one it was.
And before that, he was talking about, he was telling him to go ahead and slip her the tongue, or if she slips him the tongue. I mean, there was, every quote from him was inappropriate, really.
Yeah.
Ugh. But I did hear, I just want to be clear, there was like some cleaning house of administration. Mm-hmm. And so we think that's somewhat connected, but he supposedly resigned is what I'm told.
Yeah,
so we're not sure he was forced to resign.
So we're
something
like
in that realm.
We want to play what he said on this show and then point out he's not on the website. But to be clear, thankfully, we're still reaching out. We've already reached out. The school district has not confirmed definitively with us.
And they've had
about his status. They've had a lot of time.
They've had a lot of time to respond. So they're just choosing not to. But regardless, if this is what got him out, but rapping about shooting up stools, that's crazy.
It's probably the trans thing. It's probably the WNBA joking.
To be fair, this happened months ago before this WNBA thing, or I bet he wouldn't have done it. I bet he would 100% not have done it had he known.
All right, some RIPs for Dolly. Todd Welch, the Dolly Parton Imagination Library gives books to so many young children.
I hope that continues.
Yeah.
Yeah. An amazing rando says, even in her final days, Dolly was an honest, down to earth woman, not afraid to make herself the butt of a joke. R.I.P. Dolly.
And Jack Hart with $5 super chat. Can you comment? Oh, this is something different. Can you comment on the tweet Sheriff Swank posted last week about his exchange with Chief Sales at a police recruit graduation in Burien?
That is crazy.
I've kind of forgot about it. So
It was about Barnes.
So Pierce County Sheriff Keith Swank claims he was at a police graduation and somebody told him that interim Chief Sales wanted to speak with him somewhere private, like away from other ears. Sheriff Swank claims that Andre Sales passed along a message from former Seattle Police Chief Sean Barnes, essentially challenging him to a physical fight, which I'm like, what? So, yeah, maybe we should look into that and get comment on it. But that doesn't surprise me if it's true, because Sean Barnes like had that aggressive reaction to that reporter. And so clearly some aggression issues are there. But anyway,
maybe you should use some of that money to go to therapy.
Yeah, so a little anger management. All right, we'll get to our thanks, Nicole. Closing sanity check coming up next. First, as a family, when's the last time that you really took a comprehensive look at your insurance and whether it still fits your needs, whether you're paying more than you should? Reach out to our friends at Firstmark Insurance, like so many Washington families have, and take the Firstmark Challenge. It's super simple. You talk to them. They're very nice. They're right here in Washington State. You go over your insurance needs, any changes that you have going on in your life. Maybe you've got kids leaving the nest or kids about to drive or any number of things. They'll go out, they'll shop their market of carriers, come back with their recommendations, and then you go from there. And for a lot of Undivided viewers and listeners, they've saved thousands of dollars, myself included. We saved $2,000 with Firstmark Insurance on our renewals this year. Or sometimes they'll just say, look, your current insurance is great. You don't need to change a thing. And they'll send you on your way. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. What are you waiting for? Your savings could start tomorrow. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I hate to do this. I hate to do it. But occasionally we got to do some fact checking. So last week and still yesterday, I'm scrolling on Instagram and I keep seeing this story popping up that California is considering building private masturbation chambers for the homeless so they can like have a place to pleasure themselves in private like regular citizens do. This was on Jesse Waters' show.
Your money could be going to free sex bungalows for a homeless harem.
I'd like to propose that Los Angeles consider a pilot program for free hygienic sexual relief clinics, primarily serving the homeless and unhoused. This means equality. It means private sexual relief through masturbation or where appropriate and consensual with a partner, all funded by public tax dollars and managed with professional oversight. It's about allowing the homeless to have the same comforts and privacy that we have today.
Free breast implants, teeth, and love shacks.
Yeah. Okay. So when it initially came out, I'm like, it's gone too far. But turns out that wasn't true. This was somebody who showed up for public testimony at a city council meeting, probably just to get some attention.
Thank you. Next speaker. Good morning. What would you like to speak to?
I have a general public comment.
So you have 1 minute. Go ahead.
Good morning, council members. I'm here today because I'm genuinely concerned about public safety, public health, and the challenges facing our unhoused neighbors. Some research suggests that sexual release can help reduce stress, improve mood, and help people cope with
all right, that's all I need to see on that. So just because you see a clip and you really think it's probably true because these cities do such crazy stuff, take a deep breath and just do a little fact checking. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Special thank you to one of my attorneys who gave me some great advice this morning to just calm the hell down and not threaten to sue everyone who says something mean about me on the internet.
Wow, that's a good attorney.
I would have, yeah, so many words, basically. Don't waste your money, Brandy. Just let the a-holes speak into the ether. Good advice. I don't need to add stress to my plate over people with 2,000 social media followers. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah, if you'd like to support our show, the best way to do that is just by becoming a paid subscriber. It's $5 a month, more than that if you'd like. And yeah, you get to support our show, catch Sunday episodes of Sundays with Subscribers, where we have guests for in-depth conversations on interesting topics. And I think that's it, basically. Just do that. I think it'd be a nice thing to do. Anything else, Nicole?
I got nothing.
Okay. Sorry for all the grotesque stuff today. See you tomorrow.